Hello everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics. I'm Andrew, and as per usual, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Rob.
Hello.
And Mick.
Hello.
So, how are we all doing today?
Fantabulously well.
I like it, you've tied it in.
I am emancipated.
He's crowbarred it in.
Yeah.
I like how Andrew froze for a second there.
To be fair, he does that most weeks when you do your intro.
See, really, you think by now I'd learn to just not ask.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Birds of Prey this week. I mean, again, but this time the actual good Birds of Prey.
By which we mean better.
Good.
I have better opinions. I would say better and in some ways worse.
Ooh. I think you struggle to be worse than the Birds of Prey TV series.
There are certain ways that the movie is worse, but I'm not going to dwell on them. See, I like the film, right? I like the film as a whole, but there are certain messages in the film which I don't really want to go into because other people have that I think were worse than the TV series.
I don't know what you're talking about, Rob.
All men bad.
They are, though. We're terrible and awful.
Yeah, I know. But I just don't want to be hit over the head with it.
Also, actually, that's the one message that I felt wasn't overdone in this female-led film.
Yeah, I don't have to. It really isn't.
In fact, I saw one comment from a lady person on the internet that said she hadn't even noticed that the lead cast was all female. It was that sort of not in your face.
I'm literally just on about the whole idea that all men just, like, ridiculously bad.
Didn't see it.
I did. That's the thing.
I think it's the distinct difference between saying all men is bad and this is a film in which the male characters happen to be the villains because it's, you know, about a group of women.
I'm not going to dwell on it. Other people have, like I said. Let's move on.
Okay, yeah, I think we've established that Rob is completely wrong, morally logically.
I don't think I'm completely wrong.
Birds of Prey.
Other people have established this fact as well, but I'm not going to talk about it now. Birds of Prey.
Those people are also wrong. Anyway, yeah, this is the 2020 movie based on the comics created by Chuck Dixon, who is also wrong morally and logically and is maybe a bit of a bad racist.
Okay.
And go, Jordan, go, go. Go, Jordan, go, go. Jordan B. Garfinkel. This is literally the entire reason I put a comic spit in at the start so I could do that. But more importantly, also, like, properly popularized by Gail Simone. I feel like she's basically the person who made the Birds of Prey.
Right.
And this movie, yeah, I don't really need to bother with any of that because it's not really a Birds of Prey movie, it's a Harley Quinn movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is, again, I'll say that's probably the one thing the film definitely did wrong, is it should have just gone with, like, Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey as the title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it does kind of big up Birds of Prey more than their respective parts in the film necessarily portray.
There you go.
Words.
You know, while I was watching it, I think the thing that struck me is the Birds of Prey in this, I would probably put, like, an analogous to, say, Black Panther in Civil War.
Yeah.
Like it's very much we are setting these characters up so they can have their own movie later.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that'll happen though.
Yeah, I hope it does. Because I know it's been disappointing at the box office, but I think that's maybe also been a bit overplayed.
Yeah.
Because I think the thing to remember is, yeah, it's not doing as well as things like, I don't know, Batman v Superman or whatever, but those are also like 12A rated, like, millions upon millions of dollar budget films.
And there's also the fact that even though you've got the popularity of Harley Quinn, Batman and Superman are DC's A-listers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's a bit much to expect the sort of B-listers to...
Yeah, to be making, like, A-list money.
The same gazillions of pounds.
Especially when, like...
Although, arguably,
they've halved the potential audience, you can go and see it.
Although, arguably, a better film than Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, fact. You know what? I'd take away the arguably from that.
Yeah, well, yeah, true. I mean, at least it only tries to tell the one story.
Speaking of it, shall we go through what that story is?
Let's do that.
So, Birds of Prey, set an indeterminate time after Suicide Squad, and also maybe, don't remember Suicide Squad, it's okay, We're just going to like vaguely allude to it.
For those of you who aren't aware, it's a loosely connected bunch of music videos that came out in 2016.
Yeah, pretty
much. Starring Will Smith as Will Smith.
So, yeah, and so in the 30 Seconds to Mars segment of that film, the Joker rescued Harley Quinn from the Suicide Squad, only they have now broken up. It was completely mutual, by the way. Don't let anyone tell you different. And Harley Quinn, yeah, she's just living her best life. She's got her own place. She's got so much whipped cream that she eats now.
Yeah.
I thought it was like Cheese Whiz or something like that.
Actually, that's yeah, it was Cheese Whiz, wasn't it? So yeah, she's not taking the breakup well. And to kind of add up on that, she's now learning that she's no longer kind of protected, basically.
Yeah.
So everyone who was too afraid to come after her because she was the Joker's girlfriend is now realizing it's open season on Harley Quinn.
And any slack that she was cut by anybody, doormen and nightclubs and pubs and bars and stuff, she causes trouble now. She gets thrown out.
And I did love like the bit when people were showing up with just like name and then grievance.
Yeah.
And you had the guy like whose leg she broke is just minor physical injury.
And the weird thing is that kind of sort of video game intro worked so much better here than it did in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think because it was just quick, wasn't it? It was just name, grievance, and then it went.
Yeah, it's not like here's an entire video game glossary entry for this character.
Here's an entire backstory.
God, Suicide Squad was a film with the video game manual built into it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, and kind of one of the main people who is now after her is Roman Sionis, aka the Black Mask.
Indeed.
Who I have to say, Ewan McGregor did really well.
Yeah, absolute bang up job. Yeah.
I think he should play more bad guys. I like Ewan McGregor as a bad guy. I think he's got suitable menace.
Speaking of saying he did a bang up job, there will be full spoilers in this review.
Yes. Yeah, I think one of the things that made the Black Mask character work was that it was Ewan McGregor playing it with charm.
Yeah,
as well as menace.
Yeah,
yeah. He's more than just like your boring, typical underworld mob figure. He's like this very flamboyant, narcissistic, germophobic, which I liked as well.
Yeah.
Like the really dark bit where like he's about to let someone go and goes, oh, is that a snot bubble? Ooh, no, kill her.
But again, that's one of the things I liked about the character he was playing was that it could flip.
Yeah.
Just it'd be really charming one moment and then the very next extremely dark.
I know, but I think that kind of was necessary for the villain in this movie because that the whole movie is shot in such a way that it shows the scatterbrained nature of Harley.
Yeah.
She's narrating the piece and she keeps jumping backwards and forwards. So you needed a villain that would fit in with that.
Yes.
So we needed to be able to see someone who was nice one minute and nasty the next.
Yeah.
And McGregor did it in spades.
He did indeed. So Black Mask, he kind of captures Harley Quinn, is about to kill her, and says she kind of bargains for her life by saying she's going to help him find a diamond that he lost and was stolen by a teenage pickpocket called Cassandra Cain.
Yeah, yeah.
We will cycle back to her at some point. And then also kind of getting wrapped up in this plot is Detective Rene Montoya, who is trying to bring Black Mask down. Black Canary, who is kind of... She starts off as Black Mask's bodyguard before sort of realising...
And a singer in his club.
And singer in his club. And also his driver. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's more just kind of euphemism for bodyguard, isn't it?
I think that's summed up on those job descriptions with and any other duties.
Yeah.
Oh, like the one Harley's writing on her card.
Yeah.
Which is like a hit woman, mercenary, psychiatrist, finder of lost things.
Yeah. All written in pencil on a blank piece of business card.
Many of the words misspelled.
And crossed out.
Yeah. So you've got Black Canary kind of eventually has a change of heart, tries to help the heroes as well. And the mysterious vigilante known only as the
Crossbow Woman.
Thank you, Mick. Yes, known as Crossbow Woman, or as she likes to call herself, the Huntress.
What I really liked about this was you've only effectively got one superpowered character.
Yeah.
and it's Black Canary. And she doesn't use it until it's really, really needed.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, it's implied she's like not had much training in a superpower, so it really takes a lot out of her.
Yeah. In fact, I spent a lot of the movie wondering, oh, is this going to be Black Canary's origin story? Is this where she discovers she's got the power? That's kind of where it felt like, because she was doing normal sort of hoodlum stuff, and she was singing in the club and had a decent voice, but there just didn't seem to be any hint that behind that was a power she knew or understood.
Yeah, I mean, they gave you vague kind of nods in that direction. And if you hadn't known it was Black Canary because of the trailers and that, then you would have been going, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, like with the drinks in the club where they start shaking while she's singing.
That, I mean, that's quite a common thing. You see that in non-superhero movies where a nightclub singer reaches a top note and the glasses shatter.
But that's what I'm saying. Knowing it's a DC film, seeing that, you would have thought, ooh, actually, is there something going on here? Is she somehow linked to... But you could have gone through several characters before you chose Black Canary.
Yeah, and well, I think it's just, it's a nice kind of foreshadowing of the point where she just like lets rip with her powers.
Yeah. But again, we come back to, it takes a lot out of her because she's got no control. She doesn't know how to modulate her voice with her abilities, so it wipes her out, basically.
Yeah.
Because I think probably the idea is that maybe she's known she's had them, but has never wanted to use them. Because they have gone with the version where her mother was also the Black Canary.
Yeah.
And she kind of ended up dying as a superhero, and so because of that, she's got a bit of a chip on her shoulder.
Yeah,
which is understandable. So, Black Canary, I thought, was a logical character. I liked the way that her character was portrayed, and I liked the effect of her powers.
I did like the kind of shy awkwardness of Huntress as well. She really wanted people to start calling her the Huntress, but wasn't really, until it got to a particular point, she really wasn't confident enough to go, actually, no, nothing.
I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead was really great in this film. Like, I loved the bit where like, she was doing kind of the sort of taxi driver type thing in the mirror.
Yeah.
And, like, I love the idea that like, she thinks she's cool is the important.
And that's all that matters. She thinks she's cool.
And if anything, that's like her arc of just having people finally validate the fact that, you're really cool, Andres. Yeah.
And that's it. The message behind this movie is a bunch of misfits coming together, isn't it? It's like a sort of comic book-based movie version of The Goonies.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know.
Yeah, it is that very sort of unlikely friendship type thing.
Actually, now that you mention it, there is a very Goonies vibe going all the way through it.
It's a team that shouldn't work, but somehow does.
Just maybe that bit where like Black Canary's complimenting Huntress and she just says, I like the way you can kick so high in those tight pants.
Because Huntress is basically wearing a tracksuit, isn't she?
Yeah.
All the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think probably the one character I do have a bit of an issue with, which I think that's kind of what Rob was arming at earlier, Cass Kane is not Cass Kane in the slightest.
Well, Cass Kane's not a character I'm that familiar with.
Cassandra Kane was...
So in the comics, she is technically the third, I think, person to be Batgirl.
Yeah.
And in that, she is the daughter of two assassins, who was basically like rescued by Batman as a child and raised to be the next Batgirl.
Yeah, but...
And like, so she's basically like, she's this deadly efficient assassin, kind of having to struggle with, I've been trained to kill people, but I've got to not do that.
Yeah.
And also like, she doesn't really know how to talk to people and basically also struggles to read and write because like, that's not things she was really taught growing up.
And her parents dead as well.
No, they're not, because her mother is Lady Shiva.
Oh, yeah.
It was like one of the heads of the League of Assassins.
Yeah.
So why does she then
go on to call herself Orphan?
Because sometimes modern-day DC comics are very silly.
Because that just confuses things then.
Yeah, basically at the moment...
Unless she sees herself as Orphan from the Bat family.
Possibly. But
except
then again,
she's part of the Bat family.
Exactly.
Basically, she has the codename Orphan and has two families.
Why do you always have to shoot down a good theory with, like, facts?
But yeah, Cassandra Cain was not at all like she was depicted in the comics. And I think that was one of the big sticking points for quite a few people who were watching this who were familiar with the character. For people who don't know,
I mean, to me, I just thought she was playing the short round role from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, that's why it was such a sticking point, because Cassandra Cain is a badass.
Yeah.
Who doesn't need to be taken under Harley's wing.
But then in this, she's just a foster kid, isn't she, that's on the streets, and she's basically the MacGuffin that brings the Birds of Prey together.
And I think the really weird thing about her is there's another character in the Batman comics called, spoiler, Stephanie Brown.
Yeah.
It was basically like a perfect fit for that kind of character.
See, Stephanie Brown would have worked so much better because of just her entire backstory.
Yeah, because like she is like the child of like a very minor supervillain called the Clue Master.
Yeah.
It's like the idea of her being kind of the...
The Clue Master?
Yeah.
The Clue is he like the Poundland Riddler?
Yes, basically.
Yeah, that is exactly who the Clue Master is.
That is exactly what he is.
But no, there was like literally even points where I was sat in the cinema going, boy, Cass, stealing that diamond from Black Mask sure spoiled his plans, didn't it?
See?
Like, it's right there.
This is the thing. Stephanie Brown makes more sense. But I can understand why they wanted to put a character like that in there, because Harley Quinn in either of her incarnations as Harley Quinzel or Harley Quinn never hurts kids, never actually does any harm to kids, to children, actually has a big soft spot for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that part of her character where she takes Cassandra under her wing and starts shepherding her and teaching her and stuff like that, that part was accurate to Harley's character.
Yeah, and I think it's just, it's a pretty common trope, isn't it, having the character taking a younger, more impressionable trainee. Yeah,
but the person who they chose, Stephanie Brown, would have been a much better choice. See, that could have tied in with the way the comics work, and that could have basically developed her into the character of Spoiler.
Yeah, and especially it's because, like, at the end of the film, Harley and Cass, they go off by themselves.
Yeah.
So it seems like they're probably, if there was a sequel, they might not necessarily be part of the team.
Hmm.
Which like makes it even weird that it's that character. Because I could maybe understand if you're thinking, okay, in the sequel, we'll introduce Oracle and like she can train Cass to be Batgirl.
Yeah.
If that's like maybe a roundabout way of trying to get to it.
Yeah. But
like if you're showing her off in a completely different direction, it's just a weird choice.
Yeah. Which, again, comes back to why...
But then again, you're talking about the movie universe as opposed to the comic universe. And the movie universe... They don't have necessarily the time to give in a Cassandra Cain backstory, especially when you've got three other major characters there. Maybe they just use the name as a nod to the fans, saying, you know.
Yeah, but my bugbear is, I don't know if there's any, like, if you're a fan of that character, you're a fan of that character, not just having the name.
Take Lord of the Rings, for example. If all of a sudden... You basically decided to make Frodo Baggins into somebody completely different. Maybe he was a six-foot guy.
Yeah, well, that's my point. Frodo Baggins in Lord of the Rings is a main character of the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Cassandra Cain was there as basically the plot device that gets the Birds of Prey involved.
Okay, then let's use Boromir then. Boromir was, a dwarf from the mountain, the king under the mountain, whatever. But make him a dwarf instead. He's a supporting character, but he's completely different in terms of...
But no, that's... You're still missing the point. He's not a supporting character. He's a member of the Fellowship, in the Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah, and that's right? What I'm saying.
But he's part of the main party. Your example would be the elf who tells them how to get to Rivendell, who's there to move the plot.
I feel like this analogy doesn't work, because... Like, that's very different to how comics work.
Mm.
Yeah. And
which is that, you have a whole group of characters, all of whom could be the main character of a different thing.
But how likely is it that there's going to be a big screen Cassandra Cain movie?
Probably not. It's just literally the point I'm just making is I don't think there's many fans who, just appreciate a character having the same name as a character they like.
Yeah.
But also, it's a fairly minor point that doesn't ruin the movie or anything for me.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they're not, with a movie, they're not just trying to get the comic book audience.
See, this is the thing. I thought that the characters were fine. It's just the name I had an issue with. That's it. Okay.
And again, I think the main reason this is such a sticking point is that there's another character who you could literally just change their name And that's like a really good adaptation of that character.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it would have been a great lead up to that character actually becoming Spoiler, having been taught by Harley Quinn rather than anyone else.
But I think this is where you get the problem with comic book fans reviewing comic book movies.
Yeah, exactly.
If you expect them to slavishly, you know, I always thought that Black Mask was Max Sidonis. You know, I could have taken real issue with that.
Yeah.
Did it spoil the fact that Ewan McGregor did such a... I also thought the mask was fused to his face.
Yeah, I think originally it wasn't.
It was just a mask. Oh, right.
But then I think he did have like a thing where it got fused melted onto his face.
Yeah, okay.
I like started looking a lot more just like, basically made him look like the Red Skull.
Yeah. But black.
But black.
Yeah.
But I guess they didn't want to ruin that, you know, $1 million Ewan McGregor face.
One of the other things that I had an issue with.
I don't think they'd have actually fused it.
Yeah.
I think they'd have done some kind of effect.
No. No, they exploded Ewan McGregor at the end of the film.
Yeah, they
did. That's why he's not going to be in anymore. That's why the Obi-Wan series has been delayed.
He's got to regrow that beard. One of the other bits I had an issue with was Renee Montoya. Just her entire position within the police department. In terms of the character, she's actually quite high up in the police department. She's a confidant of Jim Gordon. She works on high-profile cases, and she's like enormously well-respected in the GCPD.
Yeah, but they explained that. She'd had the fall from grace.
Yeah,
And they specifically explain she should be higher up, but like her colleague took all the credit.
Yeah. I know, it's just that whole bit just kind of, I don't know, I was unhappy with that bit. I like Renee Montoya as a character.
I mean, that
may be why I'm just a bit kind of...
It's all that gives her the motivation to team up with the Birds of Prey.
No, I know, I don't have an issue with that bit. It's just, I like Renee Montoya as a character in general. Like,
But this is back to the earlier point about
exactly.
Cassandra Cain. You haven't got the time in a two-hour movie with
three,
four main characters to go back and say, oh, and by the way, this person is a confident.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mentioned in passing that she knows Jim Gold.
Yeah, and especially the important part of that character is her eventually leaving the police to go, like, be a superhero by herself.
See, that's the bit that I really like, because that then cues her up to become the Question.
It does, which, you know, might be a thing that happens in the sequel.
Oh, and the Question? That sounds like another Poundland Riddler.
You don't know the Question?
Have you got the answer?
No, but the Question does.
All right, okay. I wasn't aware of the Question. I'm just saying it sounds again like another. It's like, how many variations on this thing can we have in one comic?
But then again, that leads us to maybe that's...
I mean, I'm literally sitting here now trying to think of all the puzzle-based villains and how can I work them into this reveal. Yeah.
You can just imagine the writer's room at DC Comics. We need a new villain for Batman to take on.
Do you know...
What about the Conundrum?
Mick, that's ridiculous.
The Quandary.
I'll have you know Conundrum is a Marvel villain.
The Enigma. Oh no, Edward Nigma is the Riddler.
Actually, that could be a nice mashup. Two rival.
Actually, you know what? We do need to have another DC Marvel crossover. Because DC have a superhero called The Question. Marvel have a supervillain called The Answer.
Oh God, yes.
It'd have to be the multiverse, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because we know from the song that there are more questions than answers.
That is like the perfect like lead in for Vic Sage and Renee Montoya have to track down the answer. Vic Sage is trying to fight the answer and he's losing. And like as he's being beaten down, says, but don't you know, there are more questions than answers. And then Renee like roundhouse kicks from the shadows. Comics writing's easy, isn't it? You just need to find dumb song lyrics and work from there.
Just work backwards from it.
Which,
hey, speaking of dumb song lyrics, music in this film was really good, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Yes, it was.
It was a far cry from the laws of Venom, Venom, Venom's gonna get him.
I can't believe every show we find a way to bring that up.
Do you know what I think one of the biggest problems watching this film for me was, I'm very familiar with all the characters, and that kept getting in the way of actually sitting down and enjoying the film.
And I think that's one of the reasons why you kind of have to not...
You have to take a step back, don't you?
You have to sit there. I went into this, I thought, right, it's kind of loosely a follow-up to Suicide Squad, which was pants.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we've had the Harley Quinn cartoon series. We've had the Harley Quinn versus Batman with Melissa Rauch's Harley.
Yeah.
Both of which have been excellent.
Yeah.
There's been a few runs in the comics since then where Harley's shone. But you've got to let all that go and not judge it. I mean, let's face it, we all expected it to be a better movie than Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it was completely different in tone, but in this one it had a consistent tone.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not disagreeing with that. This is the film it was supposed to be when they started filming it.
Yeah, but if you tried to put all that baggage that you know from comics, onto a sort of flow chart to try and write the plot of a movie and squeeze all that continuity.
Oh, no.
And knowledge and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No
we
DC
know that.
Movie yeah. would ever get
well, and I think, it's more generally, like I said at the start of the review, this is not a Birds of Prey movie.
Hmm.
So if you are a fan of the Birds of Prey comics and you're expecting things like there's going to be Barbara Gordon and she's going to be, in the clock tower and she's going to assemble the team to, fight some kind of... I know, international drug smuggling operation. That's not what this movie is.
Yeah.
And you've just got to make peace with that.
Yeah. It's more Gotham Girls than Birds of Prey, isn't it?
Although
without Catwoman.
This was supposed to just be like I think the name was Gotham City Sirens, which is like Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy and Catwoman.
Mm.
But they changed it to Birds of Prey to maybe, so they can kind of spin it off a bit for other things.
Yeah.
I will say probably my one actual complaint with the movie is I thought the first third or so maybe dragged a little bit.
It did.
I think it did the whole, oh no, wait, hold on, we've got a flashback to a different thing. I think it did that just a little bit too much.
It did, but I think that was an interesting way of showing the way that Harley's mind works. I think it told the story in a way that Harley would tell a story. But I think you're right. I think there was a lot of extraneous stuff that you didn't really need, that didn't have much to it. But that said, I didn't think that the last two-thirds felt that rushed to make up for that.
One of my little tiny, tiny gripe. I love the action in it, but I just thought there was a lot of focus on Harley not killing anyone. Which I can understand because they're trying to portray Harley as kind of an anti-hero more than an actual villain.
Yeah.
I understand that, but it's kind of having watched the cartoon and seen how easily violence comes to Harley in the cartoon.
Yeah.
Your criticism is this thing is not like this other thing.
No, but that's what I'm saying. There was just this slight disconnect because I love the action in it. I do think the action was really well done.
Yeah, well, I think it's like it's one of the guys from one of the John Wick films is helped out on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which definitely shines through.
I love the action in it. It's just with it being Harley and having so recently watched the cartoon version of Harley. It's just that weird disconnect between the two. Not
although to be fair, it's not usually Harley that kills people.
Yeah, this is true. Sometimes it's a geriatric man dressed as a motor car.
Cyborg.
Yeah.
Cyborgman.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love Cyborgman.
I love the fact that the car he transforms into is basically the hearse from Ghostbusters.
Not this week.
Not this week.
Not the next week or the next week. It's the week after those ones.
He's making us wait.
That's all right, because...
We have a schedule, goddammit. We're sticking to it.
All right.
Because we're nothing if not consistent. Which podcast is this again?
One of the ones we do.
All right, okay. So back to the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've probably said most of what I want to say about it.
Okay, so on our scale, then, that we've got... The ever-changing scale, yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's the way most rankings work, is they do change if you've got to put a new thing on them.
No, no. What we tend to do is change the way that we rate them.
Oh, yes. Well, we do have quite a fluid ranking system.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we have a list of 1 to 5 of things we've watched so far.
Okay.
At the top is Watchmen. At the bottom is season 2 of Titans. Where this go?
Above the TV series, I'd say.
Definitely above the Prey TV series.
What was in number 2 and 3?
I might as well go. That's a top and bottom. Like, we've got some massive list and not 5 things.
Yeah.
Well, we've got more than 5 things. It's just Andrew hasn't.
We have watched. I should point out that we have watched more than 5 things. It's just that we've only watched 5 things in preparation for podcasts.
This year.
No, we did cover The Boys and stuff like that.
Not this year, we haven't.
Oh, is this only this year?
Since we started doing CMC.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Oh, yeah, by the way, this is a Comic Movie Club episode, everyone.
We're not calling it that anymore, are we?
We are at the moment, Rob.
Until it transforms magically into the superhero known as Behold.
Yeah. Remember when Mick made the fun joke about me not knowing what show it is? That's because, like, we've got about 5 different things in the work, most of which change names on a constant basis. Anyway, number 1, Watchmen. Number 2, Crisis on Infinite Earths. Number 3, Titans Season 1. Number 4, Birds of Prey, the TV show. Number 5, Titans Season 2.
I'll be honest.
The only thing that we're consistent with is our inconsistency.
I would rate this, I would put this 3rd after Crisis.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, I'll put it above Titans Season 1.
I'd say I'd be tempted to put it 2nd.
Ooh, above Crisis, you said?
I think above Crisis.
But Crisis had Burt Ward in it.
Yeah. And Crisis basically connected.
I mean,
which trumps everything.
Crisis connected all of the DC stuff into one handy.
It consolidated all of DC's comics into one monthly repayment.
Yeah, which I didn't see coming, I'll be honest.
I mean, there were so many bonus fanboy squeeze in Crisis on Infinite Earths that it has to be number 2 because it wasn't a number 2.
That, and it has Brandon Routh as the Atom and as Superman
Prime.
Wait.
So does that mean that now the ranking system has to go like Watchmen at number 1, Titans Season 2 at number 2, which is actually the bottom one because it's a number 2.
No.
And then
No. It goes at the bottom because it's a number 2.
But it's not. It's a number 5, soon to be a number 6.
But the reason it's there is because it's a pile of number 2.
Like we said, the Birds of Prey TV series was a victim of its time, but Titans Season 2 had no excuse.
But anyway, yeah, I feel like I'm outvoted, so Birds of Prey can go at number 3.
Yeah. Yes. Democracy and power of personality won out again. Oh, I'm badgering.
Yeah, so I was going to say, what personality?
No, we just combined ours.
Oh, so we actually have
our powers
on
combined. Summon Captain Personality.
Anyway, we're going to go for a break, and then we'll be back with what we've been reading.
Hey, you're in like Flynn with Quentin Flynn here on The Geek Show. So glad to have you along. Keep it glued. Keep it glued? We don't even know what that means. Just stay here.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello. We're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Welcome back, and now it's time for our usual look at the things we've been reading, and we're starting off with Mick, who is giving me very disappointed looks.
Yes. Yes, I am. When I was given this manga for review purposes, it was, well, to say oversold is an understatement.
Okay.
Oh, it's brilliant, were the cries. Oh, it's fantastic. It's probably one of the best mangas you'll ever read.
Okay.
I refer, of course, to Saint Young Men.
Okay.
Which is the story, dear listeners, of Jesus and Buddha,
yep,
having a gap year.
Yep.
In
five
downtown
stars out of
Tokyo.
Five.
Yeah.
Okay, now we just edit around that.
Now you see,
sounds like
that's
a really positive
thing. If all you do is have that as your plot line, it sounds like a 5 stars out of five. But it's just dull. Nothing actually happens. The gags are lame or deeply based on theology that's widely available to look up, but if you don't know, you don't know. I think dull. It's so dull. So mind-numbingly dull.
See, I liked it. I'll be honest.
Yeah, I quite like it as well.
I mean, really?
I mean, that's kind of the point. That it's like, it's Jesus and Buddha, and they're just hanging about.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the only gag in it. That's it. None of the rest of it is remotely funny.
I don't know. You know, the Yakuza thinking Jesus is the son of a mob boss who got out of prison in 3 days because it was the will of his father.
That's a joke about the resurrection.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, some of it is just farcical, like the commuters on the Tokyo Underground mistaking Buddha's extended earlobes for strap handles on the tube train.
I think that's a good gag.
That's 13-year-old schoolboy humour.
Yes.
I expect better of you two.
Why? Have you not listened to us?
I know, but I can live in hope.
I was going to say.
I mean, if anything, all the problems you have with this manga are entirely your own doing.
Exactly.
What? For growing up?
Yeah. You know what? I'm disappointed in you, Nick.
Right.
You should have known better.
So, Hikaru Nakamura, I want you to take this manga you've written and think about what you've done.
I didn't give yourself a pat on the back.
In response to that, I am going to take this manga that you've written and I'm going to enjoy it once again.
Good. You're going to take it to a nice loving home like it deserves.
Right. I'm going to go wash my eyes now.
Jesus and Buddha, you can come home with me.
See, that's funnier than any of the gags in there, and it came from you, who is famous on this podcast for being the gag killer.
Yes.
I rest my case.
He says with his arms outstretched.
Yep. You rest your case, and in 3 days it'll come back.
All of this is so much funnier than what's in there.
I mean, some of the blurb on the back of that collected volume compares it to Monty Python. I can only assume by people who've never seen Monty Python.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was Python.
Yeah, no, that's not a good comparison at all. No.
I mean, the blurb has been written by people who've heard that the Monty Pythons did a parody of Jesus.
Yeah, I would not say this was comparable to the Python stuff.
No, because the Python stuff was funny.
Yeah. As mean as we've been, I can understand that St. Young Men does have a very particular sense of humour.
Yeah.
And I do get, like, why someone would not enjoy it.
Yeah.
Bloody students.
Also, this mic stand is definitely not, like, screwed in properly. Which I guess makes it appropriate for the Harley Quinn one, because it's got a screw loose.
Hey!
Okay, so leaving St. Young Men and going to, well, a collection of, I hesitate to call them Avengers because really none of these, except for possibly Wolverine, are Avengers, but apparently they are all Avengers. Savage Avengers!
I mean, over the past few years, I think the bar for entry in the Avengers has been lowered significantly.
So this is written by Jerry Duggan with art by Mike Deodato Jr., colours by Frank Martin, and letters by VC's Travis Lanham. And this is collecting Savage Avengers at numbers 1 to 5 and material from Free Comic Book Day 2019 as well. So this is one of those ones where you have Wolverine, Venom, Elektra, Punisher and Dr. Voodoo and Conan.
Actually, Dr. Voodoo is an Avenger as well. He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He can summon magic snakes.
See, Conan?
Yeah, but this is the thing.
I mean, Conan's an Avenger now.
That's
Conan the Avenger. I missed that one.
That's the bit where I suddenly went, what? Because on the back, they've got Wolverine, Venom, Elektra, the Punisher, and Dr. Voodoo in bold letters. And in their midst, Conan the Barbarian, just in plain text. And like, okay, I mean, but...
this looks more like the Avengers, the tribute act.
It kind of is. Yeah. It kind of... this is basically, oh, look, R ratings are all the thing these days, so we're going to do an R-rated Avengers. But who can we choose? Oh, I know, Conan, Savage Sword of Conan. Let's do that, because we can't afford Kazar. He's tied up in all sorts of licensing stuff. So let's use Conan.
I don't think he is. I think they just didn't want him.
Yeah.
Which is silly, because Kazar comes with his own saber-toothed tiger.
Exactly. Even though they never existed.
You make that sound like the advert for an action figure.
But then you got Dr. Voodoo.
I mean, I've got some big news about comics, Mick. A lot of them are just excuses to sell action figures.
See, the thing that bugs me about this is that, you know how some stories are trying very, very hard to be edgy and cool and mystical and slightly horrific? People who want the blood of warriors, they basically want to pour all the blood of these warriors into this giant pit to do certain nefarious things. And so they're
probably to imbue themselves with the spirit of the warriors so that they can then become evil versions of the warriors, and then they can all have a big fight and we can turn it into a massive movie and make gazillions of dollars.
Yeah, but one of those so-called warriors that they choose right at the beginning is an opera singer.
I mean, there is that one where all the there is that opera where they're all Valkyrie, you know.
Also, I feel like I would read a comic about a superhero who's like an opera singer during the day.
I actually would as well. But anyway.
Also, you know what we were saying earlier about how Birds of Prey is cool?
Yeah.
Because all the characters have like similar levels of powers.
Yeah.
Like in this, you've got like one of the most powerful warlocks in the world, a man who can heal from any injury.
Yeah.
An alien monstrosity. And some people who are good at stabbing, and one who's got a lot of guns is.
Yes.
I've just thought, you know that idea you've had about the superhero who's an opera singer by day?
Yeah.
Do you think that was the inspiration between The Masked Singer?
Yes, that's definitely where that show
that show came from.
It was either that or an acid trip.
I'm not even going to talk about where that show came from because I know the history of that show.
Do you think there's a version of The Masked Singer where, like, Batman comes on? Sings like a soulful song. So I think it's billionaire playboy Bruce Wayne. And then one of the other judges, don't be ridiculous.
Given that the show started in South Korea, that's highly likely.
Batman. You know what? Just talk about your Avengers, Rob.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a rabbit hole. I'm too afraid to go down.
Trust me, you don't want to go there.
Wait. Were there a lot of soul singers?
Oh.
No, but Ryan Reynolds has been on the Korean version of The Masked Singer.
Anyway, you can do your Avengers now.
Well, I don't understand the story. It doesn't. It just launches straight into this whole thing where it's like, look, we want to do this for this because this. And I'm like, okay, yeah, justify your actions.
But it's called City of Sickles. What's not to understand?
Oh, is it called?
City of Sickles.
It is called City of Sickles. For some reason, I kind of half saw the title and thought it was called Too Many Sickles.
See, this is the thing. It's called City of Sickles.
You think they sent this? No, can't go anywhere with that gag. Not anywhere I want to go anyway.
I get certain points of the story, but I'm just reading it and going, this seems like it's just trying too hard to be edgy and cool and, you know, R-rated and everything like that. And coming back to what you said, Andrew, you've got this massive disparity in power levels between the Punisher, Elektra, and Conan, and Venom, Dr. Voodoo, and
Wolverine.
I think I've just... read,
fight between Conan and Wolverine was interesting because Conan turns around and hits Wolverine in the head with a sword, and all he gets is a clang. And then you see a picture of Wolverine with a sword sticking off his head. I'm like, okay, that's funny.
That is good. I do like that.
You know,
that's just in practicing his Rhino tribute act.
Yeah. And then the fight keeps going on from there. I'm thinking the fight would not go on from there because this is Wolverine.
Well,
we're
also,
talking
surely
about.
They've established already there's not really anything Conan can do to Wolverine.
Exactly. That's what I mean. The fight would not continue for pages after that because it's Wolverine.
This comic does contain the most disturbing phrase I've ever seen written in a blurb on the back of a trade paperback. Conan discovers a dark secret squirming in a genie bottle.
It's just not a good word, is it?
It's not.
Oh, no.
It's such a bad word that Mick's had to take his glasses off.
Oh, no. Rob, is that where you're ending your review?
Yes.
So speaking of squirming, I've been reading Cells at Work, Code Black.
Yes.
Which has a story by Shigemitsu Harada, art by Issei Hatsuyoshiya, and is based on the property created by Akane Shimizu. I'm getting better, aren't I?
Is it A-K-A-N-E?
Shut up, Rob. I know what.
In which case it would be pronounced Akane.
No, it isn't. I say how words work. I have a linguistics degree. Everything is what I say. Just because the way I say it doesn't make sense with the way Japanese phonemes work.
Yes.
Doesn't mean it's
maybe
wrong.
Maybe it's like why they didn't let Schwarzenegger dub his films into German, because the Austrian accent is like a West country accent. Maybe your pronunciation of Japanese names is the Japanese equivalent of a Bristol yokel.
Although,
great, so I'm a Japanese bumpkin is what you're saying.
Although, have you seen the trailer for the new Jackie Chan Arnold Schwarzenegger film, which is probably only going to have 8 minutes of both in, called The Iron Mask?
No.
Look for it on YouTube. It's bizarre.
Do I have to?
Anyway, Cells at Work. Mick and Rob, you're both familiar with it.
Yes.
You know, it's the idea of... I mean, it's basically just Osmosis Jones, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's set inside a person's body where all the kind of cells are embodied by sort of people...
They're anthropomorphized.
Yeah, anthropomorph. That's the word. That's the word that I also
It's like a space
say.
Opera set in someone's body, isn't it? With attack forces representing the white blood cells and all the rest of it.
I just want to clarify something. The original Cells at Work was set in the body of a healthy person.
Yes, and that's the difference between that and Code Black, which is set in the body of what is implied to be a kind of a middle-aged salaryman as he like falls into... like a really bad habits from work stress. So it starts like eating greasy food and drinking and smoking all the time. And it's just kind of exploring how all those things can affect the body in quite bad and cataclysmic ways.
In the original Cells at Work as well, if the female character was the red blood cell and the male character was the white blood cell, but it's reversed in this, isn't it?
It is, which, I mean, to be honest, I feel like is not that big an effect. Because a lot of the characters don't really seem to be characters as such. They're more there to just sort of explain bodily processes.
Yeah.
And I've noticed from the cover of that, because I covered the original Cells at Work Volume 1 and found it to be a really good and interesting way of introducing kids to the way that the human body worked. I noticed from yours that it's 18 plus.
It is indeed, which... I am very unsure about, because it does seem to be that very similar style of we are introducing like how bodily functions work, but most of said bodily functions are the penis.
Right.
Which is like how it's got the 18 plus, because there's a whole bunch of stuff about like erectile dysfunction and... I mean, I feel like we all knew that's where it was going.
Yeah. Well, actually, I thought, he's going to go on. He's going to go visiting certain types of bars and picking up certain types of disease.
Oh, Mick, why? we were maybe going to skip over that bit. But there is a chapter where the body gets a gonorrhea infection.
Oh. And,
there's a lot of tentacles.
There's a lot of squirming.
There's a lot of squirming tentacles and ripped up clothing. And that wasn't a fun chapter that I enjoyed. That was a sad time. But it's weird because lots of it is just, it's that very straightforward, textbooky way of doing things. And then occasionally I feel like someone involved realize, oh, wait, this is supposed to be an 18 plus. Here are some breasts. There you go. and just a way that no one really seems to be that invested in. Just it's obligatory pornography is what it is.
Oh, we said it's 18 plus. We've got to stick some in there.
Yeah, it's literally that.
How do we get an 18 rating? Nipples.
But yeah, but it's weird because it doesn't necessarily feel like a story for adults. Like, there's not much of a storyline to get invested in. It's only really like the main red blood cell character who has an arc.
Yeah.
And that's just about him like going from, oh, I don't know if I can do this job, to this job is bad and I hate it, to kind of rallying around to, no, I've got important work to do, got to keep that blood oxygenated. And that's maybe not really enough to spread over two volumes.
Yeah.
See, I think this is where you run into a problem with something like this, where it's adapted from someone else's original idea. Because this isn't made by Akane Shimizu, is it?
No, it's not. It's by Shigemitsu Harada and the Issei Hatsuyoshiya.
But it's based on the original Cells at Work, and the original Cells at Work had a clear idea of what it was trying to do.
Yeah.
It had a clear idea, this is the human body, this is how things work, and this is what I wanted to pick.
And they told that story through the fact that the red blood cell was newly formed,
yeah,
learning the ropes, and there were stakes raised because certain things, like an infection or a tear in the skin,
a scrape
or something
wound,
like that.
A staph infection. And so, the chapters had titles like that.
Yeah, and there were like clear sort of consequences to those things that could result in the degradation of the red blood cell into oblivion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I will say, I think the overall arc of the story of like the idea that this city that is the body like gradually falling apart, becoming more and more like basically like an apocalypse, I think that's quite well done.
Yeah.
But it's just, it maybe feels like something that would have been a good like 8 chapter or so thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like they said, oh no, that's like a bit more than one volume, so I've got to pad it out a bit to make it 2 instead. Like what you see a lot in superhero comics.
Where you get those trade paperbacks that feel like 4 issues would have done, but they've managed to squeeze 2 completely unrelated.
Yeah, just to round it out.
I think there might be a third volume.
Really? Because the end of volume 2 seemed very very final.
I'll look into it, but there might be a third volume. I can't remember off the top of my head, but there may be. But yeah, so you're not a fan?
No, I'll tell you. It's more one of those things that I liked and found interesting rather than like necessarily being, oh, I'm very invested in the story of this manga. Yeah.
When I read the original Cells at Work, it was more that, because it was obviously aimed at an age group lower than 18.
Yeah.
But it was obviously aimed at being like a more educational piece. But I found it an interesting approach to tackling the subject matter.
Exactly. But and not only that, the actual subject matter itself was actually really interesting.
Yeah.
There was stuff that I learned from reading Cells at Work that I just didn't know right at the beginning.
I've also learned things. Like, do you know...
Would you like to unlearn some of them, Andrew?
I mean, I know why you don't pee yourself when you make the special juice. So that's fun.
No, you leave it squirming in a genie bottle.
Oh... If that Christina Aguilera song goes on the radio again, I'm turning it off.
That's how you produce your dark secret.
I'm getting it all over Conan the Barbarian.
Oh.
No wonder he's so savage.
So I could just see it now, just Conan rubbing the genie bottle and something comes out and hits him in the face and I've learned the dark secret.
Where is my savage sword?
That's how he got into this trouble in the first place.
Anyway.
See, this is why Birds of Prey was right. Men are terrible.
It's true. I have no complaints anymore.
Anyway, I worry this is going to sound somewhat ingenuous, but big thanks to Turnaround for providing today's reading material.
Yeah,
it's given us lots of discussion points.
And I think that brings us to the end of the show.
Yep. Yeah. As Andrew said, there are changes afoot.
Indeed. Mysterious. Well, I say mysterious and exciting changes. You've basically already said we're going to be... The artist formerly known as Comic Movie Club is maybe going to become its own podcast. So look out for Behold! Coming soon to a podcast thingamajig near you.
I don't know if Mick knows this, but Andrew and I already established that actually raising your arm in the air in like holding your hand in like a claw while you say things dramatically actually is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Doesn't really come across on a podcast, though.
No, it doesn't. But you have to, you know, if you say like, behold, it's a lot of fun.
It's more of a just for me thing.
Yeah. That's it from us for this week. You can catch all of our shows, in fact, all of our episodes on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll find all sorts of other stuff as well. Or you can find us on whatever podcast app you're using. And if you are using any podcast service, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure and it does help us improve. Until next time then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.